Heavenly Father, this morning we come to you with a word of unification. For your word tells us that only your counsel will bring us back together and understand one another. We pray for the United States of America. Father, we stand strong in your word and steadfast, immovable in the commitment to follow you. Father, we also pray for the leaders of the state of Colorado. And for this meeting today, may we accomplish your will in your name above all. Amen.
Amen. Amen. Thank you. Commissioner Haas, would you please lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Haas?
Here.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Here.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Here. Any changes to the agenda, Mr. Dornkamp?
Yes, sir. Need to remove under item 8, new business, letter B, discussion and consideration of agreement with Colorado Cold Consulting. We're not ready for that yet. Colorado Code sent us some information last night, and myself, Pam, or the board has not had a chance to review that. And then also item N, discussion and consideration of support letter for naming the new state park, Fisher Speak State Park. Those both need to be removed.
Hear a motion, please.
I make a motion to approve the agenda.
Second.
Commissioner Haas?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes, and I'd like to remind everybody on the call today to please keep your phones muted unless you are speaking or being asked to speak at that time. It helps create keep the feedback and the echoes that are happening on these Zoom calls. So thank you very much. We'll move on to consideration of minutes, regular meeting minutes of June 2nd, 2020. Any questions or concerns? Entertain a motion.
Having reviewed these minutes, I move for the approval.
I second that motion.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Haas?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes. B, special meeting minutes of June 9th, 2020. Any questions or concerns? If not, we'll entertain a motion.
Make a motion to approve the minutes for June 9th, 2020.
Second.
Commissioner Haas?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes. Special meeting minutes of June 10th, 2020. Any questions or concerns? If not, entertain a motion, please.
Make the motion to approve the special meeting minutes for June 10, 2020.
I second that motion.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Haas?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes. Reading of correspondence, Commissioners Committee reports. Commissioner Lopez, would you like to go first today?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quite a few meetings that have taken place. A couple of them, I just want to highlight some of the meetings that have taken place in the last couple of weeks. The Pell study meeting, the Southern Mountain Loop Planning Environmental Linkage Study, CDOT and South Central Council of Governments held their final stakeholders committee meeting. Of course, all these meetings are Zoom. They address the feedback. And so now one of the things I believe that once the study is completely done, it'll basically go back to the public and see if there is any last and final input. That was a very informational meeting. They talked about how some of the existing exits and stops along the trail could be used, such as the I-25 El Moro integration with of course the I-25 corridor. stop would be part of the whole thing. So we'll be hearing a little bit more on that. I think CDOT and the South Central Council of Governments will be coming up with the next steps to go forward on this particular study. A couple of other meetings that I attended is CDHS at the statewide level, talking about the impact of a couple of bills that the legislature was actually considering, and the how this could impact the 2021 budget. A couple of bills that I want to make just a quick mention of: Senate Bill 20-29, Cost of Living Adjustments for Colorado Works Program. That this particular bill is requesting $500 for TANF recipients to be given a one-time cash installment. And right now, at this point in time, there was a lot of feedback back and forth between counties, because thus far, the bill didn't have a cap when it came to a dollar amount. Approximately 17,000 recipients were in there. I believe the bill passed both houses and on its way to the governor for signature. I haven't confirmed if in fact is going to be active, but this would take about $8 to $10 million from the TANF statewide reserve. Mm-hmm. Another one that is worth mentioning here was the Senate Bill 20-217, the Criminal Justice and Public Safety. This is the bill that enhances the peace officer's integrity. One of the things that that was a lot of dialogue and conversation. The governor basically, this is one that had to do with the speedy trial that actually was postponed until next session. The one that I really want to talk about is the 227, the peace officer's integrity, the one that is probably on his way to the governor, had about 27 amendments, and we just got to keep an eye on it. A couple of things to keep an eye on, but we'll follow up with some of those later on. A couple of other CCI board meetings, setting up a summer business agenda for the mandatory meetings that we need to have. Also, I'm honored to serve on the Princeton-Gorey Scholars Scholarship Committee for Princeton University. So we had a meeting last week, and that went over some of the finances, and it was important and imperative to hear that a lot of the Los Angeles County students are eligible basically to attend Princeton and any other university in the state of Colorado. So there is plenty of funds, and if anyone out there has any questions, feel free to send them my way. Honored to be part of this committee. Another committee that I attended was the Children's Hospital of Colorado Springs. They went over what kind of an impact financially the hospital has had just in the last 3 months because of COVID-19. There is an excess of $60 million in revenue losses. And so a lot of information going on. And the last meeting that I attended was the one that we had yesterday with the Partners for Drug-Free Communities. A lot of information coming forward that could be impacting our community. So more detail for anyone that may have any questions, feel free to reach out to me. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner. You've been busy. Commissioner Hess.
Well, we've had several CCI committee meetings where the Southern District met, and we were evaluating bills that were coming up, and that's Felix and I know we're on many of those. One of them that they asked me to write some testimony to was House Bill 1420. That was going to affect the tax increase and possibly negate any exemptions that ag may have as far as off-road fuel and that sort of thing. And I did testify to that in opposition to 1420 without the exemption left in there. There was many people that was able to testify to that effect, and we did get ag exempt. The ag exemption stands. The other one that we were, all three of us were highly involved in was Senate Bill 3, the Fisher Peak Project Funding Bill. And I know that we all were asked to contact different legislators during the debate and let them know our feelings about the funding for that project. It was reduced significantly, but we were able to get $1 million passed to help with the soft opening this fall. The other thing I'd like to say that's kept me really busy the last 2 weeks is WOW District 3 and our Kim Fire Department, they can't catch a break, one fire after another. We had a Borrella fire was on the 5th of June. June 6th, the Deer Canyon fire in Kim. The Borrella fire consisted of about 400 acres. The Deer Canyon fire was 3876 at the last report that I got. And we had to sign over the delegation of authority. Was on the 9th of June, and we thought we were in the clear for a few days, and then another round of dry thunderstorms. Yesterday we had the Jesus Mesa fire is 40 acres now, and thanks to the Road and Bridge Department and our maintainer, they were out early this morning and put a fire line around that fire, and hopefully that will help contain it, and they will be flying over and doing an MMA. And pray for rain. That's the end of my report.
Yeah, I've been busy too out there with them fires. Thank you, Commissioner. As for me, pretty much the same thing that the two commissioners said previously, along with OPI, Otero Partners Incorporated, at a board meeting yesterday that I was unable to connect with due to technical issues. However, there are still funds available for the micro loans and our everyday traditional loans. I believe we have three applicants in Los Angeles County that are undergoing the micro loans at this time or in the middle of the application process. So hopefully they'll be put on our desks here in the next few days so we can move forward and getting some funding out there. Along with what Commissioner Haas related to with the Senate Bill 003, I'm very happy to be part of that with this board and this team, along with our partners in the city of Trinidad and our community, getting that passed through. We were cut from $6 million down to $1 million, and we didn't think we were going to get that. So congratulations to Los Angeles County, City of Trinidad, our community, and our residents for that happening. I believe that should be signed sometime this week from the governor. We'll next move on to our public comment section of this meeting, and I'd like to just remind everybody about their devices and keep them muted until they're speaking. We're going to start off with an agenda item of Horizon Farms first, but I'd like to ask everyone on the call today if they have any comments regarding any of our business, new business items, to have that discussion now, and any questions or concerns, or just basically pretty much public comment of your concerns on our agenda items, and not to ask them during the section when we are consideration of these agenda items. The only questions people that will be asked to speak will be called upon by the board, and any questions be directed to the board, council, and staff by the board. So if you have any comments after Horizon Farms starts, please feel free to unmute your phone, announce who you are, and continue for a three-minute comment. So we will start with Horizon Farms. Are you on the call, Mr. I'm losing my papers here.
Malaspina,
are you on?
Yeah, Commissioner, he's on.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead, Mr. Malaspina, you have the floor.
There's been a question asked about the usage of the water on that county farm that we leased. To make a long story short, water is short this year. There's not hardly enough water to go around to do much of any good with anything. So we went ahead and diverted that water from the farm to a productive field for the time being. I think there's a big misconception that that we're just got that farm to take the water off of it. It's not. There's just not enough water to do anything with this year. I mean, any given year on that farm, when people were trying to farm it, they could raise about 10 acres of hay. Well, we're so water strong on our place that we could shove our water back onto that farm and raise about 80 acres of hay without issue on a normal year. That water should be able to flow back and forth through those boxes without issue. It's fine. The Southside Ditch Company approved it. The Southside Ditch Company is actually one that made the headgate adjustment for that. They not only is allowed, it's kind of recommended to for farms that only have a little bit of water like that. You could share it with your neighbor, push it back and forth, and that's kind of what we're doing out there. It's essential to the operation to make that farm profitable to be able to move that water around. I mean, I'm sure the county's not going to have a complaint of me shoving 150 shares of water through that box that normal only has 16 shares. I'm sure they're not going to have a problem with me putting extra water on that place, so it should be a two-way street. I should be able to pull that water off when I need it elsewhere and move it around to utilize it, the resource that we have. As I said, this year it's so late in the year that wasn't worth. We tried to put water on it, and all we were going to do is water a bunch of noxious weeds because that's all that's in those fields. Nobody's farmed it in 10 plus years. You know, the previous tenant had it, and he would just open up the water, let it run to water the weeds so he could graze cattle on it. As far as the water assessments for the current year, the county had paid those, and Horizon Farms would be willing to pay those or reimburse the county for those assessments. As per the contract, next year we'll pay 100% of them all, but I would like the county to rethink and to look over the ability to be able to transfer that water around. It's essential to making that place. I mean, you're going to have a year like this, we could have raised maybe 1 acre of hay with the amount of water there was. I mean, and next year, if it was a good year, maybe 10 acres with the amount of water that farm is entitled to. But if we can move water back and forth, we can shove, you know, 400 acres worth of water is what we're farming out there. We could, when we're cutting and baling hay, we could shove water around. I mean, we could make a go of that place. And that's the reason why nobody's made a go of that place thus far, is because there's not enough water there. And we just happen to be with installation of all these sprinklers that were so water strong that we could shove water onto that farm and make a go of it.
Mr. Meluskini? Yeah, Commissioner House.
Yes, sir.
I think what the concern was is I wish that you would have brought this to our attention right there at the beginning, and what your intentions were with the farm and with that water. And maybe that's our fault for not asking you what your intentions were. But yeah, it was concerning to me to see that water go to the neighbor's farm when that water could have been used to fill a pond even on that county farm. If I owned that farm and the water was diverted without me knowing and you were leasing from me, I would have had questions to that. I think anybody would have. And so I like the plan that you have coming out in the long term. I just wish that you would have let us know that up front. Thank you.
Yes, sir. And I do apologize about it. I didn't think nothing of it. That we do that with several farms. You know, right now I'm helping Darrell Aubuchon farm his place, and we do that with Steve Larson up there. You know, we put all the water on Darrell's place one go around, and then, you know, when they comes around again, we'll shove it all onto there because there's just not enough water to get any work done truly. So, and that is my fault. I just kind of took it for granted that, you know, it happens all the time on that ditch. It's allowed within that ditch. I didn't think it was going to be a big deal. And it is my fault for not bringing that to your guys' attention initially. And please, please, take me serious. I'm not trying to hide anything. I'm not trying to do anything crooked. I mean, I'm trying to be upfront. When Dornkamp called me about it, I'm upfront about everything that we're doing out there. And I'm, you know, ultimately trying to benefit the county. Their piece of land is going to be improved. You know, you're going to have fields that are built again. I mean, if you look at the farms that surround that place, those are the nicest farms in the county, I guarantee you. There's not nicer farms than surround that. And those same people that are farming all that, we're going to be doing that there. I mean, Horizon Farms was the farmer of the year last year and the conservationist of the year 2 years ago for the state of Colorado. I mean, it's not like we're trying to do bad to the county's land. We're trying to improve it.
Mr. Malaspini, Commissioner Felix Lopez, thank you for your comments. Just wanted to kind of reiterate what Commissioner Tony has mentioned. One of the responsibilities of a public official is to actually adhere to what is in black and white. You know, the lease tells us and it tells you the conditions and the execution thereof of all its responsibilities. And in the lease, it does state, in fact, I read that again last night, went over the document, that water will not be diverted. So certainly, I mean, I think the understanding is there. Might have been an oversight. However, you know, for personally, it's a personal responsibility to adhere to the terms and conditions of a contractual agreement at this point. But your comments are well taken.
Mr. Malaspini, this is Luis. Who said farming was easy, right?
Yeah.
We appreciate your comments today and for coming in and clarifying your intentions. In the beginning, you made mention of possibly adjusting the water usage and further usage down the road. I believe that conversation needs to be held with Mr. Dornkamp and with our county attorney moving forward, and then be brought back before the board if any adjustments to the lease would be made at that time. So we appreciate your efforts and coming forward today, and thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll keep on going to public comment. Mr. Dornkamp, do we have anybody that's chatted in that have any requests to be on?
I believe Extension Agent Lori Arnold wants to address the board.
Mrs. Arnold. And you might have to star six to unmute.
Ken, I did. Sorry about that. Hi, I just wanted to make a comment. I know that you guys are going to be addressing the variances later on in the agenda. And what came out yesterday from the governor regarding guidances for outdoor events and stuff, I didn't know if that changes the way the variance is going to be submitted or if there'll be any changes, because there was a bunch of changes that were released yesterday. So I just didn't know how that was going to affect the second variance.
Mrs. Nelson, would you like to address that?
Can you hear me, Commissioner Lopez?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So at this point, the variance that we have has been drafted. It's been sent to the people that need to sign off on it. So if we want to address it and vote on it today, we cannot make any changes. If after the variance is sent up to the state and it is approved, and subsequently the state sends out different guidance for those areas that we've asked for a variance request for, we then have the option to go with what the state has put out if it's less restrictive than our variance. If our variance is less restrictive with the state, then we can continue down that way.
Does that help, Mrs. Arnold?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Mr. Dornkamp, anyone else signed up?
Commissioner, I don't see anyone else that has asked to address the board. Is there anyone in the audience want to address the board? Any topic? I see none.
Okay, having okay, we'll move forward then to item five, presentations. UC Denver Fairground updates. Mr. Dornkamp.
Commissioner, we've been asked and have been working with UC Denver on fairgrounds improvements, and they would like to do a presentation right now for not only us, but the audience also. on concepts, et cetera, that they've been developing for potential upgrades at the fairgrounds. And I offer Jeff Wood, their instructor.
Thanks.
Wood, are you on the call?
Well, yes, I'm here.
Go ahead. The floor is yours, sir.
Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes.
Good. Okay. So I'm Jeffrey Wood, and I'm with the University of Colorado Denver University Technical Assistance Program, which is a program funded by the Department of Local Affairs, DOLA. I'm not sure if Tara Marshall is on this call or not. I don't see her name, but she's our DOLA manager for the area, and I'm sure many, if not all of you, know Tara. We were contacted sometime late last year regarding improvements and renovations to the Los Animas Fairgrounds, which we've been working on. We've been meeting with our stakeholders, and we thought it would be a good time to bring the commissioners in to sort of see what we're up to. We'd like to, at some point, have a community-wide meeting that we'll be working on in the next month or so to let the residents know what's going on and offer comment. It's important to us that we have community engagement like that. So this is really the first step in that. I've got two students here that will be walking you through the plans. That's Elena Gagnon and Todd Jones. And we will be talking about improvements to the park area and athletic field possibilities, and then also improvements to the grandstand building and a renovation of the pavilion to create like an events center. And with that said, I'm going to turn it over to Elena. And what I'd like to say, if you have any questions during the presentation, just because there's so many people here, either chat it out or raise your hand, somehow we can answer your question. But maybe after the whole presentation is over, we can take a bunch of, you know, questions and comments at that point. So anyway, without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to Elena. It's your floor.
Hi, everyone. My name is Elena Gagna. I am a Master's of Landscape Architecture student at UC Denver. So I will start with a bit of the context, including the proposed walking and bike path around the whole fairgrounds. So this first layout shows a couple different options for where we could integrate a pathway. The few here in the middle, the yellow, red, and orange, all would be options that would go through the existing entrances of the wall along through the center of the park, and then purple would be going through the exterior most option. So we could do a couple of these at our last discussion. Leaning towards having this yellow and orange as some routes to choose from. And next I'm going to zoom into this half here and look at what we could do with this existing park area to revamp that. So first, we've gone through a few iterations, but we have landed on the southern portion park, which includes a full-size basketball court, and the addition of horseshoe pits. We had a second pavilion here, so this could be rented out, or two different families could use this at the same time. We've also integrated up here we have the existing new play structures and exercise equipment, and over here as well, but also the additional playground equipment that we've just acquired. And then additionally, there would be bike racks and signs, kind of wayfinding in this area. And then in the northern portion, we have a couple options for how these athletic fields could make use of that area. So this first representation shows a softball or little league size baseball field with a 60 by 94 yard soccer field, which is a usable size, but a smaller than a FIFA traditional size field. So next we have integrated a major league size baseball field and showing that smaller size soccer. So these are just ways that we could really use the most of the space And then lastly, this is a full 70 by 110 yard field, which would be regulation size and could be a good option for the local club and school sports to be using. So next we will move on to the grandstand design and some of the architectural features. So I'll stop sharing.
All right, hi everyone. Let me share, I'm Todd Jones, Masters of Architecture student. Let me share my screen really quick. Okay, so what you're looking at here is the grandstand building. The major interventions that we're wanting to do is, one, we need to put an elevator in the building to get access to the second floor, as well as make rentable or leasable spaces on the second floor that could hopefully bring in revenue. So what you'll see is three different schemes that kind of address the in three different ways. On this first scheme, what you have is on the bottom floor is the event space that's already existing. So we'll build out this kitchen to better accommodate that event space and the upstairs spaces. We are looking at putting an elevator right there where I'm highlighting, which means we'll have to adjust the entryway into the existing bathroom, which is here. By doing so on the second floor, the elevator would exist right there. And then one option is to put single use bathrooms directly above the bathrooms on the bottom floor. The main entryway for most people would be this staircase down here, which would lead directly upstairs to either a check-in space or a lobby space. I've kind of used those terms interchangeably, with one rentable space if you go up the stairs, it'd be to your right, with two multi-use bathrooms directly off of that, and then one long rentable space down on this end of the building. So that's scheme A. So if I go to scheme B, essentially the bottom floor is the exact same as scheme A. One other option is to make multiple use restrooms on the top floor directly above the bathrooms on the bottom floor. That same size rentable space on this side of the building. And then we are actually thinking about demolishing the bathroom that exists down on this left end or the north side of the building in order to create a larger rentable space right there. And then scheme C, we are thinking about putting the elevator actually over by the stair. What that allows us to do is once again have that rentable space over on the north side, have that check-in space here, but larger multi-use restrooms right in the center. And then one other option we were thinking about is doing a conference room that would be rentable as well or reservable directly off of that check-in or lobby space. So that is the three options for the grandstand building. I'll move on to the pavilion, which is on that north side of the park or of the fairgrounds. What we're really looking to do here is actually fill in the walls of the pavilion. Right now it's essentially a roof and columns, and so it's open air, and we want to create an event space once again to better accommodate larger events like weddings or, you know, any other larger event really, and then fill it in once again to bring revenue to the fairgrounds. And so all three options, you'll kind of see the same rooms again. So we were able to fit two event spaces, one large and one small, as well as a kitchen that will act as both a kitchen with concessions for events, enough space to act as a catering kitchen for the events in the spaces, and accommodate a classroom setting to where one example that was given was possibly teaching classes on healthy eating or healthy cooking for people with diabetes or something like that, as well as bathrooms and janitor's closets and storage. So in this scheme, let me scroll down here just a bit. You enter from this southeast corner into this lobby space where you have access to both event spaces. There would be a window from the kitchen into the lobby to, for concessions, and then access into the classroom from that lobby as well, with men's and women's restrooms with the janitor's closet in the center, in a large event space consisting of most of that pavilion building, with the patios off of the south side. The scheme B, basically we're looking at moving the entry more towards the center into a lobby space, once again, connecting to both event spaces, a window from the kitchen and the bathrooms and storage. One thing we had talked about is the possibility of even having temporary walls that could divide these event spaces or air walls to even accommodate, you know, three smaller events at the same time. This kitchen is a little bit larger and has a larger classroom area as well, which could potentially be really nice depending on how much the community is looking to use those spaces. On scheme C, once again, we see a similar variation with the event space on the top, on the, well, the northeast corner and a smaller event space on the southwest corner. This scheme has the entry from that same space as scheme B, and also a large kitchen and classroom area on the southeast corner. That the classroom would also then act as kind of that window for the kitchen for concessions, if that's how it's going to be used. One thing I want to point out here is this kind of large storage area. What this rectangle is denoting is some form of a stage that, so the storage area could also be used kind of a backstage area depending on the event going on there. And that stage could change sizes however we kind of agree upon and see fit. So those are the three grandstand schemes and the three pavilion schemes. And I'll let Elena finish.
Great, thanks, Todd. So in looking at some options for that outside area of those pavilions, we really wanted to meet some of those needs of shading and creating a place for seating outside and a bit of coolness in that summer heat, especially during the fair. So these are just some concept precedent ideas of what that area could look like. So kind of starting that discussion of what elements would work and what might not. So pulling out some seating or perhaps a center fountain, could have more of these picnic tables with string lights, could give that walled courtyard feel and still accommodate and expand that event space. So next I've shown here a couple different shade options. So we have these swales or trellises or trees to really enhance that. And then in each of his schemes, so these are following the architecture A, B, and C. So we can have, this is going a few different pathway options and just ways to integrate these elements into that outside area, perhaps some shade sails there and fountains. So to create an area with some native plantings that would also expand the event space, perhaps for weddings or other events that can be inside, outside. So that concludes our presentation. So we can take questions on.
Hey, Elena, just before we cut out, somebody mentioned they can't see your screen right now. Is that typical, or could everybody else see your screen? Do we have problems?
I can see your screen.
Okay. All right.
I saw it just fine.
It may be that
Jennifer at Early Childhood Council is the one that said it.
If I may make a comment, we can also share this electronically to someone that might be interested by sending us an email if you missed anything. So, okay.
Yeah, that is a great point. I will send a complete version of everything we've talked about here to Phil, and he can distribute. I don't know what the best vessel for distribution. Unfortunately, Zoom does not have a link function where we could just have it here so people could click on it. They should actually have that. We'll make sure it's available however best we can. So we don't want to embargo this information at all. So I'll step back and Phil, maybe you should monitor anybody who has any questions or comments. I don't know how to keep it from being chaotic.
And I can scroll back through.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure there's a really good way to go ahead.
I'll just have this option up, so just let me know to scroll to a different page so we can talk about that as we go. Thanks.
Go to the full layout. Kimberly, which full layout can you? I'm getting chat, so that's why I'm reading those. Which, the whole overall?
Yeah, can we see what the whole overall picture would look like again?
You mean the site plan of the whole fair?
Yes.
Do we actually have that? It's an actual great question. We really should have that. We don't actually have, this is where the events pavilion is. Oh, this is the grandstand building that we're talking about. And then this is the athletic fields, and this is the park. And I'm sorry, my computer doesn't let me draw very well, but that's the best I can do right now.
Yeah, also just to clarify too, those last options Elena was talking about with the shading and stuff would occur directly south of the pavilion building. Let's see if I could highlight it really quick. That would occur somewhere in this vicinity.
Yeah. We're both drawing it, Todd.
Yeah.
Yeah, we, just so we're clear, that was, when we first met with the fair, the folks at the fair, it was conveyed that during the summer heat, there's very little shade on the facility, and it would be nice to have a place where, you know, on a hot day, you could go and have a lemonade or beer or whatever you guys serve at the event center concessions area, and try to create some place that's like an oasis. So, we're not, you know, it will evolve over time, and we don't know if we should have more tables. And we also thought it would be a nice amenity in the event we had a wedding or some other kind of, you know, a reunion or something else there, to have some outdoor space. It's always nice to be able to get in, you know, especially, you know, when it's not super hot, it's nice to be able to go in and out and enjoy the fine Colorado weather we have.
Jeff, let me make a recommendation. Certainly, these maps are going to be available one of these days. I wish we could get back to, you know, face-to-face, and I think we'll be able to do that. And it would be an amazing opportunity to actually meet at the county fairgrounds to have this public input and questions, so on and so forth, and then do a walkthrough of the facility of what you all are highlighting here, because, you know, for some of the attendees in paper, you know, I was even calculating what the square footage of the event center and that kind of thing. It would be, so hopefully now that these new regulations are opening up the statewide and the gatherings could be a little more ample, we might kind of keep the door open to have a face-to-face meeting to get comments and do, you know, just answer any questions that the public may have.
Well, I think we all agree that we would, that all these things would be far better if we could have a face-to-face and really look at stuff and kick the tires and hopefully that will happen sooner rather than later. So we stand ready as soon as we are released from quarantine or whatever we're calling it. So, like I said, we will arrange to have an exhibit of all these drawings at the fair, you know, however the fair is held and, you know, whatever limitations it has, we'll make sure that there's a display there and we will have a follow-up community meeting. But as soon as we can get down there, I agree, it would be great to have a host a community meeting on the fairground property itself. So I've actually noticed that if you want to send me a chat, I could respond, or we could maybe, if anybody has a question, or if you want to send me a chat that says you'd like to speak, I could maybe let you in to speak with us. If there's any questions, I mean, I want to stress, we're not looking to have any of this stuff final just yet. We would like some feedback if there's one scheme you like better than the other, but when we go to the community at large, we want to let them know that we're still taking input and we haven't made any decisions. It's not that good of a way to do a public engagement meeting if you show people one scheme and say, here's what we're going to do. We want people to know that their input is important and nothing is set in stone just yet. And so that also applies here. So I'll stop talking and see if there's anybody else who needs to say anything.
Mr. Wood, this is Commissioner Luis Lopez. Mm-hmm. And forgive me for being having a technology disability. So I do everything via telephone. I have one question that I'd like to have Mr. Dorenkamp or yourself address for the listeners and for the media regarding during these trying times with our funding shortages that are having. I'd like to be clear to the listening audience where we're going to be receiving these fundings to move forward with this project with and when they are available. Mr. Dorenkamp.
Commissioner, our plan is to seek funds from a couple of grant sources, one being Colorado Great Outdoors, the GOCO grants, and then also Department of Local Affairs Energy Impact grants, if there's funding available in the Energy Impact grant funds. And maybe Mr. Wood has other sources too that we can pursue, but the county doesn't have the cash to try and do these improvements. We might be able to come up with a little bit for a match on these grants, but for the most part, we'll be going after grants to try and make these improvements. And then along the lines of what Mr. Wood had mentioned is we are trying to put together a poll, Survey Monkey poll that we'll get out to the public here in the next week or two to gather input also on their thoughts of the different schemes that UC Denver's presented.
I'll just piggyback on that conversation. we have, you know, as we're all going through this COVID crisis and everything that goes with it and the economic toil that's being caused by that, typically the federal government, when they're trying to reverse or stem the tide of bad economic things, will generally pump money into the economy in the form of infrastructure and shovel-ready projects, and projects that are pretty far down the pipeline will get favorable treatment because there's going to, you know, construction is the one bit of things that lift all boats. You've got materials, you've got designers, you've got engineers, you've got contractors, you've got materials providers. When construction is ongoing, you've got people using restaurants and grocery stores and stuff like that. So I expect at some point when we get to the other end of all this catastrophe, we will have There will be other money that we had that we don't even know about yet. I will also say that you know, USDA Rural has grants and zero interest loans available for some of that stuff, and we will definitely put together a package for Phil and the commissioners to review in terms of funding sources. Most of them will want the county to have some skin in the game, but there's a way of kind of taking from one pool and using it as a match for another pool. There may even, because of the historic nature of the grandstand, there could be some History Colorado money available as well. I have not explored that, but that was going to be my intent, was to speak with somebody about that as well. So there's probably, off the top of my head, 5 or 6 funding sources that could help here. I also do want to stress that because of the nature of this project, it's very easy to phase it. You could apply for grants 1 year to do the grandstand building, and then the next year do the event center. The park and everything is sort of, you know, off in the GoCo world. So even if you can't do it all in one fell swoop, you may be able to do it over the course of 2 or 3 years. So lots of ways to kind of get to the end point. So I hope that answers the question. You know, I think it's a super important question.
Yes, it does. Thank you very much. I just wanted to have that clarification for our listeners and the media out there to understand where this funding is coming from, that it's not actually coming from wholeheartedly from Los Angeles County tax dollars. So thank you for that clarification.
Okay. Well, also, I will say that we have had some success. It depends on the community, but we've had some success when we put up an exhibit at the event, the fairgrounds event. There's times that you can get donors and sponsors that want to, you know, things like buying a brick or, you know, buying a seat in the grandstand or, you know, paying for stuff. So there's creative ways you can do some fundraising beyond just grant stuff and tax revenues. So we'll need to get, there'll need to be some creativity applied to get it all done for sure. So,
Mr. Wood, could you also explain to the audience where your funding's coming from for UC Denver?
Well, I don't know. I haven't looked at the budget. I think the state, hopefully the state keeps us going. I don't know. Honestly, we get the money from the Energy Impact Grant as well. I know the Energy Impact Grant funds have been diminished the last 6 months or so. So that could, but DOLA, Department of Local Affairs, gives us a grant that pays my salary and pays the salary of my student employees and our travel expenses and whatnot. It's important to note that we do charge the organization or the communities that we're working with a nominal fee. I don't recall what our fee was with you off the top of my head, Phil, but you probably have $1,500 or $2,000 in the game. We don't usually charge until we're completely done with the project. And so we're basically at your disposal. We're not a money-making entity at all. We're here to serve communities without worrying about, you know, whether we don't want to turn a profit ever. So, but anyway, so we're Energy Impact Funds is what makes us go forward and help communities. So.
Any other questions from the board?
No, thank you so much.
I'm just going to respond to the chat. Gates Family and the Betcher Family Foundation, those two foundations have always been generous with helping out communities. And so, like I said, I'm sure they would be prodded. If there's any, I mean, I will say this, if there's any input, Phil, I don't know if you have a vessel for taking in people's email questions and stuff like that. We're happy to, you know, respond in writing, you know, after you've reviewed stuff, if there's any comments, questions, or ideas, really, you know, we're looking for anything that can help make the project serve the community better. So,
yeah, I'll put this email out there. Anybody who wants to make comments about this is free to email us. Get your pencil, pen, and paper ready. Los Animas County at yahoo.com. Los Animas County at yahoo.com.
Okay.
Anything else?
If you guys don't have any other questions, we'll let you get on with the meeting, the rest of your meeting.
Mr. Wood, I'd like to thank you and your team and Elena and Mr. Jones, I didn't catch Elena's last name, I'm sorry, for your efforts. Very good work. You got to be proud of yourself. I'm excited to see this park come into fruition. I've been a dream of mine since I came into office nearly 4 years ago. And hopefully by the time I'm out of office, it will come to fruition. So thank you for your efforts. And all of you at UC Denver, thank you very much.
Oh, that's really nice. And I just wanted to say is we love working with your community and we look forward to seeing it come to fruition as well. So this is the first step in what will be several steps, but at the end of it, we'll all enjoy ourselves in a shady spot at the new fairgrounds. So, all right, guys, have a great day. Thanks for letting us join you today. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Okay, moving right along. Elected officials updates. We'll see if we have the sheriff on. Mr. Navarrett.
Yeah, good morning, commissioners. Just a quick update on the Deer Canyon fire. I just signed back over delegation to the Kim Fire Department from the state. It only needed my signature as the fire warden, so I've sent that to Kim Chavez as well. So it's officially back in our control. And just a update on our deputy in the Kim area. I was informed by our candidate that he did pass all his tests yesterday. So we will soon be having a resident deputy in Kim. He lives down there and he's from there. And his name is Mark Jackson, so hopefully soon we'll get him going and we'll have a deputy in that portion of the county once again.
Well, Commissioner, that's great news.
Congratulations.
I'm sorry,
Sheriff. That's awesome.
Yeah, thanks for assisting us in getting that position back. It's much needed in that area, and the residents are real excited about having a deputy back in that, as well as we are here. So that will help everybody. We hope to get him going fairly soon here.
Thank you, Sheriff. Okay, moving along. Clerk and Recorder's Office. Do we have anyone from the clerk's office?
This is Joseph. Can you hear me?
Good morning, Joseph.
Good morning. Of course, in our office, ballots did go out last week. Most people have received them. We are getting quite a few back. And as of next week, the 22nd, which is Monday, we will be offering curbside election services for anybody needing any type of service that possibly if they didn't get a ballot or if they had an address change or anything like that. From the 22nd through the 30th election day, we'll be offering curbside services in addition to the online services and all phone services available also. And I think that's about it for us.
Thank you, Mr. Mestis.
Thank you.
County Assessor's Office. Is anyone from the County Assessor's Office on? Mrs. Amato? County Treasurer's Office. County Treasurer's Office. District Attorney's Office. County Coroner. Okay, moving right along. Item 7.
Hi, this is the Treasurer's Office. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I'm also answering for Jody. She's on a assessor's conference right now. She's here but can't be on this conference call. I'm filling in for Donna. And I guess she had sent you something, Luis, about what the governor was asking for extensions on tax payments. And at this time, Donna's not going to do it because we've collected over 90% of property tax already. So we are not, she's not going to sign the extension till October to pay your property tax.
Yes, I did see that. I believe she sent it to me yesterday or the day before in the plethora of emails we received. So I'm glad to hear that our tax payers are not in the need for assistance and extensions at this time. So I'd like to thank our residents and our taxpayers, our property taxpayers, a big thank you for not needing that extension at this time. So
most definitely. So that's what she wanted me to mention, that she's, so if anybody asks, we are declining the extension till October like the governor was offering.
Okay, anything else?
That's all from this office.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
Okay, item 7, unfinished business. Mr. Dornkamp.
Commissioner, there's no unfinished business.
Okay, item 8, new business, discussion and consideration of Starkville land sale. Mr. Dornkamp.
Commissioner, there was a party who expressed an interest in some property that the county owns in the Starkville area. The square footage of the land is 3,647 square feet. I'd asked a number of realtors within the Trinidad area to send me some values for those properties out there in the Starkville area. I received those values, I averaged them up, and the per square foot average is about 73 cents a square foot. So I multiply that by the number of square feet that this family is interested in and that we have out there, that the county has out in the Starkville area, and I come up with a price of $2,662.31. This family, this party is interested in purchasing the property at that price. Your thoughts about either selling them outright or selling that property outright to this family, or probably a better direction would be to auction it off, perhaps via GovDeals, online auction house that we've used in the past. So I guess we need a discussion and consideration first to sell the property, and if you want to, how we're going to sell it.
Mr. Dornkamp, as I see in the presentation and in the maps and everything, there's not a whole lot of surrounding residents that have access to that. Would that property be landlocked through Mr. I can't remember his name right now, the family's property, or would they have to have a file for an easement to access that property if it goes to someone else other than this property owner?
No, I don't believe so. I believe it butts up against the county right-of-way by what I see in the maps. But that property is just adjacent to the north boundary of the party that's interested in purchasing it.
Okay, and traditionally, have we ever had an issue like this in the past with county-owned properties? And I know we recently purchased some in Branson from a private owner, but to sell it, have we done this in the recent past that you know of, in an auction-type manner or direct sell to a person requesting the property?
Not that I'm aware of.
Mr. Doran Campa, Commissioner Felix Lopez, just wanted to follow up with all the threaded emails and communication that we have had. I would feel much more comfortable if, and I'm not certain if the procurement rules and regulations will allow us to sell this out, but I'd like to put that as a public notice that this particular piece of property is going to be for sale. It gives everyone the opportunity and thus the fairness and equality for the current neighbor would be given equally, but I'd rather go from that perspective and put it out for bid rather than directly. It might just appear unfair to somebody else.
This is Commissioner Haas, and I agree with those sentiments. I believe that it ought to be out there for public bid.
Go ahead, Phil.
I was going to ask, do you want it a silent bid, or do you want me to put it on that auction house website?
My opinion would be that we offer it in a local manner. We put it on a nationwide system. We might have some bidders from India or China, who knows where. I think the intent of this was for the local residents there to possibly have an opportunity to purchase. So I believe we should offer that to the surrounding neighbors as well, or the people of our community first.
Okay, we'll develop a silent bid and get it out to the public.
Okay, so we don't need to take any action on that. We'll put that on the next agenda item for our next board meeting. Since we skipped amended item B to be off of the agenda, item C, consideration of resolution 20-022, SCRETAC appointment board times three, alternate times one. Mr. Dornkamp or Ms. Chavez?
Commissioners, we've got vacancies within the RETAC committee that need to be filled. Administrative assistant Paula Lucero sent out an email soliciting anybody with interest to submit a letter of interest to her. We did receive some letters of interest from Mr. Dan Moynihan, Ms. Sherry Backrack, and Kim Chavez said that she would do it. Our Kim Chavez said that she would do it. And I believe also an Irene Trujillo was interested in perhaps filling the role as an alternate. So we have a resolution developed addressing such.
Any questions from the board? All right, please read the resolution.
Resolution of the Board of County Commissioners of Los Angeles County, Colorado, making appointments to the Southern Colorado Regional Emergency Trauma Advisory Council, PRIN, RETAC, NPRIN. Resolution number 20-022, whereas Southern Colorado Regional Emergency Trauma Advisory Council, PRIN, RETAC, NPRIN, was created as a result of legislative authorization to provide for planning and coordination of emergency services within a five-county region, and whereas Los Angeles County is part of the Southern region, which also includes the counties of Huerfano, Pueblo, Fremont, and Custer counties, and each member county of the Southern Colorado RETAC is authorized to appoint up to three individuals to serve on the board of directors and three alternate representatives for the purpose of setting policy, conducting the business of Southern Colorado RETAC, and whereas three positions of board to the board of directors and one alternate position are vacant, now therefore be resolved by the Board of County Commissioners of Los Angeles County, Colorado, that one, the Board of County Commissioners does hereby appoint to the Board of Directors A, Kim Chavez, B, Dan Moynihan, C, Sherry Backrack. Two, the Board of County Commissioners does hereby appoint as an alternate A, Irene Trujillo. Upon motion made and second and affirmative vote, this resolution was adopted this 16th day of June, 2020. By order of the Board of County Commissioners, County, Colorado.
Hear a motion, please.
I'll make the motion to approve Resolution 20-022, Southern Colorado RETAC appointments mentioned.
I second that motion.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Hess?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes. Item D, consideration and discussion of design build RFP for courthouse phase two upgrades. Mr. Dornkamp.
Commissioner, we solicited interest from a number of companies to help us with a design on the improvements we're making at the courthouse, those being electrical, replacement of the windows, and communication upgrades. We gave a tour to a couple of companies who had expressed interest, but of all of them that we reached out to, only one had actually submitted an RFQ/RFP, that being Wilden. We've worked with them in the past. Their fee schedule is based upon a percentage of the total project for architectural and engineering services, the same at 8%, construction management and owner representative services at 6%, design builders overhead and profit 18%, and fee on increase in the GMP mutually agreed upon parties to 20%. That would be if we had any change orders. I also spoke with one of their firms who are going to be helping them, and that being the Anderson Hollis Group, and asked them who would be responsible for any change orders, oversights on design or oversights anywhere else in that process. And Wilden assured us, and I have witnesses because our team was together when we spoke with Wilden, that being the county team, and they assured us that Wilden would pick up any of the change order costs that were not addressed in the design and the engineering of our upgrades. If the county, once the designs and upgrades are decided on and the county at a later time decides to, you know, add more electrical outlets here or some other improvement that wasn't addressed in the original documents, then the county would be the one responsible for those change orders, which makes sense. But anything that's missed in design or the engineering would be Wilden's responsibility to pay for those change orders. So with that being said, I guess I would ask the board to approve our agreement with Wilden.
Thank you for addressing that, Mr. Dornkamp.
Get this project started.
That was one of my big concerns, was that change order issue. I have spoken with a fellow neighboring county on a project, and that was a concern that they had brought to my attention. So thank you for clarifying that. Makes me feel at ease regarding this issue. Anything from the board?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Mr. Dornkamp, on the fee schedule, again, I know they kind of addressed that. What is the total overall percentage if, when you add up all the percentages that you mentioned, what is the, translated that into the percentage of the total project cost? How do you interpret that from the meeting you have with them and then from the literature that we have in front of us?
I interpret it about, it looks like around 25 to 30%, if I'm understanding the percentages correctly.
Sure, okay, so then we're on the right page. So the project will be approximately $1.3 million, somewhere around there. The total project cost could, you know, $350,000. Is that fair to say?
Yes, I'll trust your math.
Okay, very good. Then my second question is here. They're looking at, is there any on the contractual agreement? They're saying that the construction phase approximately is going to be about 165 days. Is there any clause within the language that there will be a penalty assessed to the company for extending the completion date, and they're having right now the project completion March 13, 2021. Is that going to be addressing the contract?
I guess we can see if we can get address it. They've assured us that the timelines that they've developed, and of course, any contractor or anybody in their position is going to assure their clients that it will be done in that time frame. But we can address that, yes.
Yeah, I think, you know, the state procurement rules and regulations does have a paragraph somewhere within for tardiness of completing a project. And then just one observation more than anything else. When I'm looking at the willed and certificate of liability insurance, I just want to note on the second box from the bottom, the last one, it says this certificate of insurance is proposal only. Additional insure and waiver of subrogation can be provided upon receipt of a written contract. So on that, I just want to make sure that Las Animas County appears as named as an additional insured entity on when we execute the contract.
Okay.
Okay. They do have that note on their certificate of insurance, and I see where they have done several projects in the local area. However, that's a company set on located in California, and I just wanted to double check when we do get into the contractual agreement, since they did already phase one, if there was any dispute and arbitration, legal arbitration, that the venue would be Colorado. I think our council would recommend that as well.
Okay, I'll make that
note. Commissioner Lopez, that concerned me as well. I saw LA County, and it was Los Angeles County, I believe.
Yeah.
It concerned me a bit too. So thanks for addressing that issue. Commissioner Haas, do you have any concerns?
No, my concern was about the sunset, and sounds like that question has been asked.
Mrs. Nelson, any concerns?
No concerns with the proposal. Of course, I'll do a thorough review of the contract once we have that. But if my understanding is what the board is voting on is whether or not to proceed with Wilden, and I have no concerns with that.
And I'd like to also add, I believe Wilden did a good job for us prior with the stabilization and of the building and the roof and asbestos abatement projects. Mr. Dorenkamp, did we have any concerns regarding that first phase with Wilden?
Not from my perspective, we didn't know. As a matter of fact, I think they went above and beyond what we actually talked or what we actually hired them to help us with. As you mentioned, the abatement part of the asbestos and some of the basement was not part of their contract, but they did assist us with that also at no fee.
Very well. Any other concerns or questions?
No.
Entertain a motion, please. Go ahead, Felix.
No, I just wanted to mention also, I really appreciated that they included the financial standing, and they're a pretty strong company, so I have no doubt that they've already proven their integrity with Las Animas County. So having said all that, I'd like to make a motion to consider the design build RFQ, RFP for courthouse phase two upgrades.
Second.
Commissioner Haas?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes, and that ringtone was perfect timing there, Tony. Okay, moving right along, item E, consideration of Yoakum Pit annual report map and fee. Mr. Dorenkamp.
Commissioners, before you should be our annual report for the Yoakum Pit, includes map and fee. The fee is $791 for permitted acreage of 67.30 acres. I'd ask the board to approve this annual report map and fee.
Any questions or concerns? Entertain a motion, please.
I'll make the motion that we consider the Yoakum Pit annual report, map and fee.
I second that motion.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Hess?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes. Item F, consideration of Mesa de Maya Pit annual report, map and fee. Any questions or concerns? If not, entertain a motion, please.
I have no questions. I pretty much stand the process, so I'd like to make a motion to approve the Mesa de Maya Pit annual report, map and fee.
Second.
Commissioner Hess?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes. Consideration of Jolly Pit annual report, map and fee. Your motion, please.
Motion to approve the Jolly Pit annual report, map and fee.
I second that motion.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Hess?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes. Consideration of Casillo Pit annual report, map and fee. Entertain a motion, please.
Yes, I want to make a motion to approve the Castillo Pit annual report, map and fee.
Second.
Commissioner Hess?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes, that's a gravel roll. Mm-hmm. Item I, consideration and discussion of air-to-ground transmitter lease with Aura Networks. Mr. Dornkamp.
Commissioner, we approached some time back from a company named Aura Consultants, and they have an interest, Aura Networks, and they have an interest in putting or upgrading the air-to-ground transmitter hardware out at the airport. And they've approached us with a lease agreement that County Attorney Pam Nelson, I believe, has reviewed and is okay with. The copy in your packet still has much of the edits in it. And it boils down to they're wanting to rent a facility out there, a piece of our facility out there for $600 a month to install this new hardware so that planes can have communications with the ground. I'd ask the board to approve this.
Any discussion from the board?
Yeah, Mr. Doran Clamp, I think the only question that I would have is, I know they're saying it's gonna be $600 a month for the utilization of the space. And I would imagine that's pretty much standard, probably average national rate to put a tower of such a magnitude. And then I don't know if there is any more knowledge that you might have on that. How did they come up with the $600 a month?
Commissioner, we had some time back, I reached out to our airport consultants, Armstrong Consulting, and they had said at that time $500 a month was typical. Okay. So I had mentioned that to this Aurora, and since then they went ahead and bumped that up to $600. I guess that's to help cover some of the utility expenses.
Yeah, and one of my other question, and I think they make it pretty clear, in the event that there is signal interference, they are going to be responsible for any FCC requirements to comply with that, because that's going to be at the airport. And obviously that's such a high sensitive facility that they should not at any point in time have any interference with the aircraft that is coming in and out of that facility. So just an observation. I know they addressed that, but I just want to make sure that they understand that the high visibility of any interference is going to be actually impacting planes coming in and out of that place.
Yes, Commissioner, and they are aware of that. As you mentioned, it's addressed in their proposed agreement, and that discussion had been had with them. And that's one of the reasons they're going right back up on the same tower that the old air-to-ground transmission equipment was on, because at that location, it did not interfere with the typical FCC radio traffic.
Okay. Thank you.
Councillor, do you have any concerns?
No, I've reviewed the agreement. I made recommended changes, and Aurora didn't have any concerns with those. They accepted the changes. So I don't have any concerns with proceeding with that agreement as it's written.
Any more discussion?
Knowing that this is an ample opportunity for the airport to finally make some revenue, and I'll make the motion to consider the air-to-ground transmitter lease with Aurora Networks.
And Commissioner Haas, with gusto, I second that motion.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Haas?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes, Mrs. Coberly, did you hear that? Yay.
Aired.
All right, now moving right along. Discussion and consideration of Municipal Leasing Consultants, LLC, Master Lease Disbursement Request for Sheriff's Office. Mr. Dornkamp.
Commissioners, we were approached by Master Lease Consultants, the financing firm, excuse me, for the sheriff's vehicles, and I'll defer to County Finance Director Christy Coberly for this.
Okay, so the drawdown is going to be right now the money for that we borrowed is in escrow. So we have $250,000 in escrow. They're asking for $237,785 to pay for all four vehicles, Ford Explorers. So what this is a drawdown so that we could actually take the money from escrow to pay Phil Long Ford for the vehicles. The money that remains, we can draw down, and I think Derek is going to request those monies for him. Maybe if he's online, he can come in and chime in to say what he wants to do with the remaining funds.
Yes, we're going to be needing a vehicle to send down to the Kim area, so I'll probably use some of the excess to outfit another patrol unit. Preferably, we're going to look at a truck to get down there for some of the areas we're dealing with, but I will be asking in the near future to use the rest of that was borrowed.
Do you want me to do a drawdown for that as well and have that come to the county, or do you want to wait until we know exactly who the money is going to go to?
I think we can wait for now. I'm just starting to research what we can find. So as long as we have it in reserves, I think we can do it at a later date.
It can sit in escrow.
Okay. Very well. Any other comments or discussion on this?
No,
entertain a motion, please.
I'd like to make a motion. Consideration of Municipal Leasing Consultants, LLC, a master lease disbursement request for Sheriff's Office and for our finance administrator to do the drawdown.
Second.
Commissioner Haas?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes, and I'd like to say I'm glad we have the excess there to assist for our vehicle out in the Kim area. That has been needed for so many years. Sheriff Navarrete, thank you for getting this coming to fruition finally after many, many years. So good job to you and your office. And look forward to seeing a patrol unit out there the next time I'm in Kim.
Yes, commissioners, us too. And we'd like to thank the board for assisting in getting this position. It's much needed, as you say, and we're excited to get it started.
When I'm traveling at 160 up and down, I'm going to have to put the cruise on now, though.
Make sure you have a radar for Commissioner Hess, okay?
Yeah, those are equal opportunity citations, Commissioner Hess.
Yes, I'm aware.
Okay. Very well. Moving right along. Consideration of OBCC 6945 for $50 to Max Ron Keo. I believe that's the treasurer's office, right?
Hey, this is Joseph. Yeah, he was just charged a fee for electric vehicle, and his vehicle wasn't electric, so we're refunding that fee to him.
Thank you, Joseph.
Thanks.
I'd like entertain to, a motion, please.
Yeah, I'd like to make a motion.
I'll make a motion. Go ahead.
Yes.
I'll make that motion to consider the OBCC 6945, 50 bucks to Max from Keel.
I second the motion.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Hess?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes. Item L, consideration of OBCC 6946 for $58.67 to Frank Montanati.
This was just a payment of a wrong renewal, so that's just a simple refund as well.
I'd like to make a motion consideration of BCC 6946 for 5867 for Frank.
Second.
Commissioner Hess?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Mestis.
Thank you, guys.
Item M.
Thank you.
Thanks, Joe. Item N, discussion and consideration of second variance request from Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment Order 20-28. Mr. Dorenkamp.
Commissioner, before you is a second variance request to the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment. I defer to County Attorney Pam Nelson.
Commissioners, this is the second request that we're sending up for a specific variance from portions of CDPHE Order 20-28. It is for bars and taverns, movie theaters, county 4-H and livestock events, and post-secondary institutions. The suppression plans, as long as the appropriate resources are available, has been approved by the health department. I have received the letter from Mount San Rafael Hospital, and I am in discussions with Ms. Kenda this morning about getting the letter from Spanish Peaks. It will also be considered by Huerfano County Commissioners this morning, as it is a bi-county health department, so we need both counties to sign on, and I believe both city councils are considering it again this evening as well. This will go up to the state once we have, if we have approval from both counties, it'll go up to the state, same as the last one, and then we'll have the waiting period for approval with conditions, approval as written, or disapproval from the state.
Any other comments, consider, or discussion? Entertain a motion, please.
I'd like to make a motion to consider the second variance request from the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment, Order 20-28.
Second that motion enthusiastically.
Commissioner Hess?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Absolutely, yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes, and a big thank you to Kim Gonzalez and Pam Nelson and our health department and all of their staff for working so hard and moving forward while keeping us safe in our pandemic at this time. So thank you very much. Item O. Discussion and consideration of coronavirus relief fund agreement with municipalities within Los Angeles County. Mr. Dorenkamp.
Commissioners, as part of our being Los Angeles County's receiving CARES coronavirus relief funds in the amount of $1,244,428. We are to enter into agreements with our incorporated towns within Los Angeles County on a funding distribution. And big hats off to our county attorney, Pam Nelson, who did a lot of work putting this agreement together, especially when she's dealing with me, who is not beyond changing numbers at the last minute. But in front of you is the proposed agreement. I'd ask the board to approve this. I've gotten some feedback. It's a draft. I sent this out last Friday to all six municipalities, and I've received word back from three so far that they are in agreement with me. They don't have any concerns with the agreement. And I've yet to hear back from three other towns, but at least one other town wasn't real interested in even opting into being eligible to receive these funds. So I'd ask the board to approve this agreement, and then I'll continue to work with those other three towns about getting the documents signed from their respective boards and or mayors.
Any questions or concerns?
Yes, Mr. Dorenkamp, just a point of clarification. In the event that, that those towns and our municipalities do not respond, is it my understanding that the funds will roll back up to the county if not claimed by a municipality and or entity?
I'll defer to County Attorney Nelson on that question.
I believe so, yeah. There's still a lot of confusion around how this exactly works, but my interpretation at this time is that yes, if we have a county or a town that does not opt in, that we should then have the opportunity to have those funds and disperse them as needed. But again, everything with this is not in any way set in stone, and I'm not fully confident that even those who have it in place are understanding it. But my initial take on it is that yes, that is how it should work.
Thank you.
Anything else? Entertain a motion, please.
I'll make the motion to accept the Memorandum of Understanding and Cooperative Agreement related to the distribution of the CARE Act funds.
I second that motion.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Hess?
I would.
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes. Financial matters. Considerations of bills and payroll for the first half of June 2020. Yes. Mrs. Coberly.
Commissioners and the county attorney.
So payroll as of June 15th for Los Angeles County was $163,218.22.
Ms. Coverly, if I may, that's on that particular page. I see there a building inspector. We have not paid any expenses. I know we're using the services from an individual from Huerfano County. Are those expenses, we didn't have any for this particular month, but we do have every now and again, correct?
I'm going to let Kim Chavez come in since she does payroll.
All right.
Good morning. He didn't turn in any hours for the second half of May.
Thank you, Ms. Chavez.
You're welcome.
We have to have the office has their own alternate to go down and fix that up. We have to take our
Okay, and then let's see, we paid bills on June 3rd for $28,212.50. Within that packet, we had some repairs for the DA's remodeling.
And Ms. Coverly, what is the to date the expense for the remodeling?
I can pull that. I can get that together, and I can email everybody on that.
Thank you so much.
Because I looked at it. It might tell on our financials too. Let's see, really quick. Let me pull my financials, and it might tell me on that as of May. Give me one moment, and I will look.
Thank you.
As of May, it's $31,268.06. But I don't think we've paid the electrician.
Very good.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Sure, you're welcome. That's in bills paid on June 10th. $145,862.17. We paid the second quarter for extension. We paid our final payment to Mount San Rafael for the DOLA grant.
I see that. And congratulations.
Yes, exactly. And then the coroner, I think this is the maybe the shell to his vehicle, the $10,000. I think that's what that was.
Yes, that's for the shell.
Okay. And then on June 11th, we put half down for the cooling system for the coroner's building, and that was $12,000. And that's it for Los Angeles County.
Really, another question on the payables. I know we pay the extension office $10,350. Mm-hmm. And on the payroll side of that, on the page one, there was zero. Do we just quarterly pay that and then that's redistributed back up by line item?
They used to have a secretary and they no longer do, so that's why it's still sitting there. So we don't actually pay for a support staff.
Okay.
So, yeah, that position was eliminated.
Okay.
Okay, so that's why there's zero on payroll. Because the other part is just contractual.
Very good.
Okay. Any other concerns or questions? You entertain a motion, please.
Yes. I'd like to make a motion on consideration of bills and payroll first half of June 2020.
Second.
Commissioner Hess?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Mr. Luis Lopez.
Yes. Item B, information only, financials for May 2020. Mrs. Coberly.
So as of May 31st, our surplus for general fund is $772,674.15. It's in everybody is falling pretty long, except we have a few that are a little bit high on general fund to where the use of their budget, like clerk and recorder, if we look at theirs, I think they've paid just 100% for a few things. You know, for the grant they received, they pay some high dollars. The accounting office is high because we've paid our auditor. Most of the treasury fees are probably pretty much paid for. Let's see, who else is a little bit high? Elections is probably high, probably from the expenditures they're doing for the election. But I think Joe said last time we're going to get, I think, like 100% reimbursement on a few of those items. The coroner's high. We know that because of the purchases that's going to come from the sales tax, excess to sales tax from the public safety fund. And we already know fire control is because 100% of that has been paid. And that'll catch up each month. If you have any other questions on... Let's see. On that?
No, I think it's really exciting to see that we're supposed to be at 52.2% and the average is 42.4. So that is, you know, roughly almost 10% average for all the cost centers throughout the county. So those are great news. Everybody's being judicially, fiscally responsible.
Right. And our expenditures are higher compared to last year, but you have to consider the, you know, with COVID, everything we've been doing, the salary increase. So our expenditures are higher compared to last year, yeah. If you notice that. Yeah. I did on page four, you'll did see, I did show an impact compared to prior last year of COVID. You'll see that a little bit if you look on page four.
Yes.
I added that just so you can kind of see a little bit the comparison. And it could be other variables as well, but just so you can see the difference of what the money, why it's less. Also on page five, you'll see our balance sheet because our audit is complete. So you'll see where the fund balances, and within the fund balance is where the DA's reserves are now. We took it from deferred, and it's actually included in the fund balance. So I can get an analysis on that too, just to kind of show you where what that is for his funds, if you'd like, and send that to you.
That would be great.
Okay. We'll probably have to, maybe today during the audit review, we can discuss what to do with our airport with the deficit in that fund. Maybe that's something we should discuss today.
Okay.
Okay.
The COVID impact, Ms. Coverly, I'm looking at the altogether cumulative impact financial to our county thus far.
Mm-hmm.
Exceed just slightly over $400,000, which, you know, it's a huge impact. How do you propose, when we get some of these CARE funds dollars, to use some of those dollars to offset some of these expenditures or some of the deficit?
Well, it's not sure if we can actually, it hasn't been brought to my attention about revenue yet, because this is just revenue. But we could actually look at the expenditures that we've been actually, doing in the past few months. But from what I understand, I thought they need to be expenditures. They're not going to actually cover the loss of the revenue. You know, even though this money's coming in, it'll actually add to the revenue. But we're also going to have additional revenues to actually cover for COVID.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Ms. Coverly. Very good job, as always.
Okay, thanks.
Acting in its capacity as the Board of Human Services, consideration of bills and payroll for the first half of June 2020. The Christy Coverly Show rolls on. Mrs. Coverly.
Okay. Department of Human Services payroll as of June 15th is $70,066.22. Bills paid on June 3rd, $6,399.21. Bills paid on June 10th, $7,492.82. That's it.
Any questions or concerns? Entertain a motion, please.
I'll make the motion to approve the payroll for Board of Human Services for the first half of June 2020.
I second that motion.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Haas?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes. And at this time, I will entertain a motion to suspend this County Board of County Commissioners meeting so we can go into our Department of Human Services meeting and acting as the Board of Directors. And then we can have that board meeting and then come back to this one and go into executive session. So this time, entertain a motion to suspend this meeting, please.
Make a motion to suspend the regular BOCC meeting and go into DHS meeting.
Second.
Commissioner Haas?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes, then let's take a 10-12 minute recess as they resume at 11 a.m. Thank you, everyone. Mr. Dorenkamp, I'm sorry, Mr. Aragon. Mr.
The addendum for the continuation of operations plan. And so I should have that finalized and drafted by end of this week and over to her. Item two, budget update. The Southeast Regional Directors meeting was held on 6-9 of 20. Representatives from CDHS were present to clarify several concerns regarding the budget. We do remain on hold with several key areas. I did send out a JVC budget spreadsheet for the fiscal year 2021. Some of the primary concerns regarding funding shortfalls are my primary that I'm concerned with is the 1.9% provider rate increase that's now been cut. That will impact us in probably the largest capacity, and then as well as the county's financial position for the annual budget with their match to the programming. So those are two areas that I do have concern with. We are awaiting word from also the Cooperative Management Program grant, which is state funded. This is still on delay with JVC. If this funding is cut, this will impact our truancy program here in Trinidad with School District 1. However, I will let you know that the interagency oversight group, the IOG, who oversees these funds between Huerfano and Los Animas County, do have a reserve fund. So that program will not see an impact until probably July of 2021. We are also anticipating a rather large cut to that grant funding. Last year, I believe our grant funding was about $69,000. Our IOG grant manager has indicated that she's anticipating a cut down to around $42,000. So we are going to lose quite a bit of funding there, but the reserves will cover this year. Again, just to remind the board, we serve as the fiscal agent for that program only and serve on their board. There is no financial obligation on DHS or the county's part. We're just a pass-through. Item three, our Colorado Works Block Grant. The Colorado Works Block Grant, which has been previously designated as the Colorado Works TANF, it's now the TANF-eligible programming. And I just want to clarify a few pieces for this. In speaking with the state this weekend and with Ms. Coberly about these funding items, DHS currently has a TANF reserve fund. That TANF reserve fund is a rollover year to year that we do not lose or send back to the state. However, we are capped on that amount at $385,000 and some change. Currently, we have about $361,000 in that account. In at the end of this month, on June 30th, the Colorado Works TANF funding, which we will be underspent by about $150,000, that is the funding that actually rolls over to that TANF reserve should we not utilize all those funds. However, if we are capped at that $385,000, we lose the excess or we lose whatever remaining balance we would have put in there. So I am meeting with state representatives tomorrow to discuss how we can utilize these funds. Part of that is in regards to, as I have put in my report, looking at providing our child care providers with some reopening funding to assist them in getting their businesses back up and running and ensuring that we have quality child care within the community for those folks who are returning back to work. My concern is that we've had a lot of folks off of work for the last couple months, and now they're going back to work. They're having a difficult time finding child care. So we're hoping that this will be a way to utilize some of those funds so that we do not lose those. Additional to that, as well, our supervisor for our eligibility unit, Ms. Teresa Garrison, is looking at providing our Colorado Works household with a stipend, which we do have approval from the state at our discretion to do so. And so we will be putting forth a proposal regarding that as well here in the very near future. In addition to that, I did list out some of the specifically designated activities for the child care piece that we can provide funding for. And so we will be looking at providing and working with our child care providers. We have four of them here in the county that we can provide them with assistance in these areas specifically.
Mr. Aragon, if I may ask a question here, how difficult is the application process for this funding available to our daycare centers here in the community? Is it very stringent? Or is it pretty?
No, it's relatively straightforward. We myself would have to work with the state to identify the allocation funding from the TANF accounts over to provide that. But for our providers, it's a one-page demographic and a 1 to 2 page narrative just outlining specifics on what they are planning to use those funds for. Part of what I'm trying to instill with this is that there's accountability at all levels with these funds that we report back to the state, and should we be audited by the state OID, that we would be able to provide them with a quarterly report of how those funds have been exhausted by the providers and how it impacts the child care directly. It's again very specific, so for instance, they cannot use it to purchase land or buildings. There are certain capital improvements such as ADA compliance that would enhance the facility, but outside of that, it's really directed towards the child care that they are delivering. So it would not be a difficult process. In addition to that, what I am requesting is that there be a small committee to review those grant applications that we have opened up. We have our child care provider employee, Mr. Gray Henry, has sent that out to the Los Animas County area regarding those funds. And so we've asked that they have those into us by this Friday. We sent that out last week. So again, it should not be a difficult piece. We've already had two applications turned in. So I believe we should be able to meet that.
Okay, thank you. And just for the for discussion, I really like this, like to have this funding available for our child care. It has really showed its need, especially during this time of COVID, for our essential workers being at work and not having daycare. So I believe this funding will help assist these organizations in moving forward. And if we get put back in that situation, God forbid, we go backwards with uptick in COVID cases in the county. So I appreciate your efforts on this and getting this funding available to our community. Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner Felix Lopez, a couple of just one observation, the other one kind of a question. You and I had a conversation last week on this. So if we have $361,000 on the current TANF roll forward eligible balance, you would probably just have about $26,000 that you could transfer from the Colorado Works TANF onto that balance. And then the rest of it, is that what you're speaking of also part of the South Central Early Childhood Program that we that you and I spoke about?
Yes, sir. So essentially what we would look at doing, and I've spoken with our state finance office to determine how these funds could be utilized, we would actually tap into the existing TANF reserves of the $361,000 to exhaust a portion of that for this component, so that we open up space for between the cap or the ceiling of that TANF reserve to allow those Colorado Works dollars to roll back into it, so we don't lose those. We cannot transfer under new state legislation, transfer TANF dollars to other programming as easily. It takes some time and energy, and so this is a way that we can ensure that we are providing to direct providers without really running the risk of losing funding at the end of the fiscal year. So we would essentially be retaining our Colorado Works TANF and providing to the providers. We're just using the TANF reserves up front in order to create that space in the funding capacity.
Well, thank you. You answered my second question without me having to ask it. So that was
great. I had that planned, just so you know. and then also, I just want to reiterate that with the Colorado Works TANF grant that we do have in place already, part of that will be utilized, as Ms. Garrison has indicated, for her Colorado Works families. And so that impact will be quite extensive. It'll be about 80 families throughout Los Animas County that would receive a stipend or an economic stimulus from the Colorado Works program. So not only are we providing to the child care, but we're also providing directly to some of the families within the county as well that have been impacted. And then finally, under our income maintenance and eligibility, as per the financials, I just want to indicate, although the financials that are reflected in this are previous month, I can report to the board and working with Ms. Coberly that our food assistance program has seen a massive increase in output between March and April. And Christy, if you wouldn't mind jumping in here at any point if you have any questions, but from what I can tell, it's about 110% increase in funding. That equates to a difference of about $409,000+ in new food benefits that went out this last month. And that is all I have.
Okay, thank you. I'll get back to my agenda here. All right, new business. Item A, consideration of caseload counts and activities by program. Mr. Aragon.
Okay, first up we have our adult services, adult protective services and single entry point, Ms. Lori Ringo, who's with me here.
Good morning, gentlemen. I just wanted to go over adult protection cases and referrals. For the month of May, we had 34 APS cases, and we were lower on referrals for May. We only had 7 referrals, but as you can see, we were high in April. And then on single entry point, we remain consistent. We have 258 CBS EBD cases, and this is for the district. We had 170 EBD CDAS cases. We had 20 EBD long-term home health cases. We had 19 CMHS cases. We had 11 CMHS CDAS cases. We had 2 CMHS long-term home health cases. And then we had 3 long-term home health only cases for a total of 475. We completed 12 assessments in which they were approved, and we completed 7 assessments in which they were denied for a total of 19 assessments.
Lori, if I may, Commissioner Felix Lopez, on these denials, and I think you've explained this to us before, would applicants come back again with a second request to appeal their denial?
Sometimes, Commissioner Lopez, they do, but some realize that they are not at the functional level to where they meet nursing home criteria. So some we explain to them why they did not qualify and encourage them that if their condition or their impairment should worsen, they should definitely contact us for a reassessment.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Engel.
Thank you.
Okay, next up we have our child support unit. I have, Ms. Valerie Eklund with me here.
Hello. We have a total count of the TANF cases of 297. Of the 297, we have 106 that are current support and 191 that are arrears only. We have 649 non-TANF cases, with 100 of those cases being current only, bringing our total count to 1,046. Our TANF collections for the month of April were $25,767.85. Our non-TANF collections for the month of April were $106,574.99, bringing our total monthly collections to $132,342.84. Our total TANF year-to-date collections are $84,934.61, and our total non-TANF are $423,784.64, bringing our year-to-date as of the end of April to $508,719.25. We do expect to see a significant change in our non-TANF collections for next month due to the stimulus payments, which we've intercepted and sent to the families.
Ms. Eklund, Commissioner Felix Lopez, what can you just highlight on the arrears only cases? Expand on that terminology, please. 191 case currently.
These arrears cases are cases where they are no longer on TANF, or we are no longer posting a current monthly support obligation. These are balances on the ledgers that were not paid in the past.
Okay, and how long do they stay on the ledger before they're completely removed, or will you carry that as a historical perspective?
We will keep them on the ledgers until they're paid in full.
Okay.
Mrs. Eklund, does the Department of Human Services Child Support still work with the state of Colorado Department of Motor Vehicle driver's license? And is that still in effect, or they get stripped of their driving privileges? I know at one time it was.
Yes, we still do. Right now, we are not suspending any license, whether it be driver's license, recreational license. We are not even reporting negatively to the credit reporting due to the COVID.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Any other questions?
Thank you. Next, we have our child welfare. I know Michelle Kendall is on the line with us. Michelle?
Good morning, everyone. So for the referrals, the child welfare referrals for the month of May, we've received 19. We're currently working with 19 children that are remain in their home. There's 22 children out of home that we're working with. So the total number of children that are served in our community is 41. There are 12 children that are placed out of home, but they're currently remaining in Los Animas County, and there's 10 currently outside of Los Animas County. So that's all the information that I have. We're slowly but surely starting to increase our number of referrals. I think as people are getting out in the community a little bit more, our referrals are starting to increase.
Any new leads, Ms. Kendall, on foster parenting homes?
We actually, our foster care worker is working with two families right now. They're in the early stages. And I believe we have two or three kinship homes that we're trying to get home studies completed, that either we're looking at placing the children in their home, or the kids have already been placed there and we're just finishing up the home studies.
Great, thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Kendall.
All right. And then finally with me, I have Ms. Teresa Garrison with our eligibility unit, income maintenance, and I'll let her take that.
Good morning, commissioners.
Good morning.
For the eligibility unit for the month of May, we had two A&D SSICS cases, one A&D SSICS HCA case, three A&D SSICS PNA cases, 117 Basic Cash Assistance Colorado Works, one BCCP, five burials, no buy-in working adults with disabilities, 78 CHP Plus health plan, two CHP Plus prenatal, 11 DAC disabled adult children, 64 eligible needy newborns, 2,139 food stamp cases, 7 HCBS CES, 2 HCBS CHCBS, it's Children's Home and Community-Based Services, 27 HCBS CMHS, that's Community Mental Health Supports, 26 HCBS DD Developmental Disabilities, 327 HCBS EBDs, 27 HCBS SLS Supported Living Services, 30 Low Income Subsidy MSPs, 1,771 MAGI Adult, 908 MAGI Children, 422 MAGI parent caretaker, 41 MAGI pregnant, 76 nursing facility hospital, 30% institutionalized, 119 OAPA, one OAPA HCA, one OAPA HCPA old age pension, four OAPA PNA, 40 OAPBs, one OAPB PNA, 38 OAP Med A, two OAP Med B Old Age Pension Medicare, 41 QI1 qualified MSP, 489 QMBs, 136 SLIMBs, or special low-income Medicare beneficiaries, 392 SSI mandatories, one SSI HCA, 53 state AND, 10 transitional food stamps, and 204 transitional Medicaid for a total of 7,620. Any questions?
I do have.
Yes, I have one. Oh, go ahead, Commissioner.
Sure.
Go ahead, Commissioner Lopez.
Thank you so much. My question, Ms. Garrison, on the adult modified adjusted gross income, are those numbers when the income goes up and down either way? Is that what those numbers reflect, either an increase on earnings and decrease?
Correct.
Okay.
Any of the programs, Lopez, the income always comes into play, whether it be an increase or a decrease in each family. So they report the difference in the income, and as a result, the work is done to determine either they qualify or they don't qualify, and then the programs can change at that point.
And this is individually done per program, correct? Because various programs have pretty much different parameters. Is that income applied to straight across or only for a program that they're enrolled currently? And if they apply for a different program, is that going to be considered as a totally new case?
It's for whatever program they initially apply for, but for some of the elderly programs, if the income goes up or the income goes down, they can change the medical program right off the system, so they don't have to reapply.
Ms. Harrison, I have a question regarding a number of months ago, maybe almost a year ago, possibly, we had some discussions, and I don't know if you were included in those, regarding the burial expenditures and the dollar amount that we were allocating for the assistance in that program. What is the dollar amount we are giving now? I believe back when this discussion was happening, when our former director was there, was I believe around $500. Is that still the same?
The burial now is $1,500.
Right.
Currently.
Okay, so it was addressed. Okay, good. Because
yes,
at the time, I remember correctly that our local funeral homes were losing money in the assistance they got regarding that. So that's good to hear. Thank you very much.
Commissioner Lopez, it actually changed in March. So from March forward is when it actually increased. So they are seeing that increase now.
And maybe this, my second question here might have been already addressed by Mr. Aragon, but on the basic cash assistance from Colorado Works TANF, we have 117 basically applications on the month of May. Is this going to be a little different than the proposed legislation that the state is speaking about from the state TANF research?
Yes. So, Commissioner Felix Lopez, specifically when the state is proposing Senate Bill 20029 regarding that stipend, what that is the state of Colorado has identified that anyone within the Colorado Works program is eligible for up to a $500 stimulus stipend. That funding will come directly from, my understanding is, the state's Colorado Works TANF reserve, not the county level TANF reserve. So that funding will be provided to them, and that will not take effect until July 1 of 2021, and then moving forward, and that would be only a one-time payment for new cases and a one-time payment for existing cases on the books.
And Mr. Aragon, then on that basic cash assistance for the Colorado Works, the program that we have here, what is the amount, or is that case by case calculated?
So the one that we're proposing correct. The one that we're proposing now will be out of our Colorado Works TANF because this, again, the Senate bill, if it passes, will not take effect until 2021. Mm-hmm. So what we're proposing is $200 per household.
Thank you very much for the clarification.
And Michael, is that going to be built into the budget or is that part of this year's budget?
That's already part of this year's budget as far as the one that we're proposing for the 200. But the one for the Senate bill 20029, should that pass, again, that will not be a piece that we would have on our budget. That will come directly from the state.
So for giving an increase, that was built into the budget for this year?
Correct. If you remember, Ms. Coverley, when we met the other day, we reviewed mm-hmm. the county's allocation to the 20%
yes.
match of the TANF dollars for Colorado Works. That's where that funding would come from.
Okay, so this is the full allocation from the state, and we built that 20% in. Okay, thanks.
Yes.
Thank you for that.
So the county's already committed that 20% into the budget. So those $200 payments that would come out, I believe it totals a little over $16,000, that would come from that area.
Okay.
And so you were speaking of then, Mr. Aragon, the 16 or so thousand that you're speaking of, the balance then you would spend down at this particular time from the TANF reserve, create the space, spend the $16,000, and whatever left over would be sent right back to the fund balance.
Correct. My intent is to keep the fund balance with the Colorado Works TANF rollover once we exhaust the payments to the Colorado Works folks, the child care providers. We would actually probably come out a little ahead of where we're at now at the 361. I would venture to closer to 370 on the fund balance once we roll everything back over.
And currently we only have 117 applications for the basic cash assistance. Would you consider any new applications?
We're getting them every day. So okay. Any new applications that we have at the time that we provide this, yes. But again, we can utilize, we'll have the new TANF Colorado Works rollover on July 1. So anything after that would go into the new fiscal year. So anything from this year that would have been allocated will already be funded under that new piece as well.
Okay. And the remaining 2 weeks that we have in the month of June, does that give you enough latitude to accommodate your expenses and transfers?
Yes, sir. As I mentioned, I'm meeting with state reps tomorrow to get that process done. So we should have everything in place paperwork-wise and approval from the state by end of day tomorrow so that we can roll these programs out. And then what I'm going to be requesting is a special meeting with the board either the end of this week or early next week to approve those financials.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
are there any other questions?
Entertain a motion to consideration of the caseload counts, please.
Motion to approve the caseload count for DHS.
Second that motion.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Hass?
Yes.
Commissioner Ruiz Lopez?
Yes. And good job to your directors and a nice report. Thank you very much for that. Item B, consideration of core services contract MOU agreement. Mr.
Commissioners, in front of you, last month we approved several core contract providers for our child welfare unit. Today in front of you is an additional core service contract with Mr. David Monarco. Again, these are components for health, mental health care, which are paid out of our core services. And Mr. Bertolino, who is with us here today, has been really diligent in making sure that these core contracts are completed and to the state on time. So I want to thank him for that. But this is a sixth provider. This individual also takes Medicaid, which will help with some of our child welfare clientele. So we'd like to put this forth. And I have sent this to Ms. Nelson for review. So Ms. Nelson, if you have anything in response to this, please let me know. But again, this is just to provide an additional mental health provider to our clientele.
So, Mr. Eric.
Ms. Nelson, you have to consider it? I'll say that again. Ms. Nelson, do you have any concerns?
No, I reviewed the contract, and I have no concerns with it.
Commissioner Felix Lopez, I'm sorry.
No, thank you. Thank you, Chair. The only question I have for Mr. Aragon, as I'm reading this agreement, that Medicaid is going to be eligible to be built back. So in this particular case, we're saying that the cost is going to be $80 per unit. So in the event the Medicaid covers a portion of that, and I don't know what rate of reimbursement that would be, then the county would pick up the difference. Is that the way I understand that?
So Commissioner Felix Lopez, let me have Mr. Bertolino address this quickly.
Thank you.
The Medicaid would only be for clients that are covered under Medicaid, and when a child is removed from the parent usually loses Medicaid, so therefore they would qualify for the core services, which would be paid through these provider benefits.
Okay, so,
Commissioner.
Yeah, there
Commissioner Felix, as in regards to that, so if the parent is no longer on Medicaid when the core services kicks in, under the Colorado state statute, those core services are 100% covered.
Very good. Thank you.
Michael, did we budget for this $15,000?
Say that again.
Did we budget for the $15,000?
On this component?
Yes.
Yes, it would have. So we have under the service, the core services contract, the budget for core mental health. Again, that's covered 100%. So anything that's on this would have already been budgeted for the year.
Okay, so it looks like we budgeted $12,000 for mental health.
Correct. So we have to stay within what we have on the budget. But this is a provider that if we choose to not use as one of the other providers for services, perhaps there's a conflict of interest, then this gives us an open door to utilize this provider.
Okay.
Okay, but it was budgeted based on the client capacity. But again, these are, if the Medicaid does not cover, we should be reimbursed 100% by the state.
Okay, sounds good.
And again, that's only mental health though.
Okay. So did we budget for the other piece then?
Which component is that?
I don't know, you're saying that, so is there another piece other than the $15,000?
No.
Just mental health.
Correct. Okay. This is a mental health provider.
Okay.
Mr. Aragon, do we need to solicit, since this is a dollar amount over our bid procurement process, do we need to solicit this out to put out to bid type of under the core service guidelines?
No, I do not believe we have to procure or put an RFP out for that, sir. I believe it's just that what we're doing is we're putting a cap on that at $15,000. That is the maximum we would pay out in units should we utilize that provider in that capacity.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions? I entertain a motion at this time, please.
I make a motion to approve the subtitle, the core services contract agreement.
Second.
Commissioner Hass?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes. Financial reports. Consideration of financials as of April 30, 2020. Mrs. Kovaly.
So if you look at the page one, I've recreated the statement of expenditures and revenues. What I've added is I've added the county share so that year to date, we could actually see the county share on here. We can, and we'll know every month if we've met our obligation for that. So you'll see where it says property tax, year-to-date revenue, what we've given them in property tax, what we've allocated is $368,488. And the county share as of April was $253,000. So as of April, we do have extra allocation available to continue the rest of the year. But each month we will actually continue to watch that because our largest months are probably from May through July of property tax. So However, we did end with the fund balance in 19, and let's hope that that will cover any incentives. We'll actually cover the 20% match.
Now, Mrs. Coberly, now working with the auditors, I believe, on this, how are we looking at a end of our fiscal year with our financials?
As of 19, we ended with 149,000 fund balance for that. But some of that might be single entry point. But we still have a fund balance compared to last year. Last year we ended with 29,000.
Yeah, so, we had a backfill about 69,000, I believe, last year, correct?
Correct. So we did really well, but you have to keep in mind too, though, Department of Human Service was understaffed last year, 19. So we filled positions, so we still need to continue to watch every month on, so that's why I continue to keep making sure that it's budgeted for and the 20% that we're fulfilling that, we don't go over that, because we just don't know with the cuts, you know, where we're gonna be for 2021. Or for 2020. So we have to continue to keep watching that.
Well, that's great news. I'm glad to hear that we're finally seem to be on track. And congratulations to Team Los Angeles County and Department of Human Services and working collectively together in keeping this issue a moot point at this time. So good job, everyone.
Ms. Coberly, is there any recommendations, now that all the vacancies have been filled, that the appropriation of mills that we did for the current fiscal year is going to be sufficient going forward for 2021?
Well, it all depends if the county can afford any more higher mills. So that's something I'm saying, because definitely Department of Human Services could probably get use an increase in mill levy, but it all depends if the county can actually afford that.
By the way, thank you so much for this one pager. It's just awesome.
Yeah, I wanted you to see. If you look over to the left, you'll see the year-to-date percentage. Mm-hmm. So that percentage is showing that that's how much we're reimbursed. We're actually, for each program, because, you know, some programs are 80-20, some are 85-15, some are 90-10. So you'll see that that's what the percentage is. It's showing you, but the revenue of what we're receiving mm-hmm. on our expenditures. Sure. So now the two bottom ones, you'll see they're higher because that has to do with accounts payable or accruals. For 19, so because the state is fiscal and we're calendar, so that's why they look different. But that's just an accounting journal entry. That's why that is. But technically, it is those two are 100% programs.
Yeah, thank you. This is really helpful.
Okay, sure.
Any other questions or concerns? Entertain a motion this time, please.
I'll make the motion to approve the financials as of April 30, 2020 for DHS.
I second that motion.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Hess?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes. And Counselor, how do you recommend we move forward? Do we want to go into executive session for DHS at this time, or we want to go back into our previous board meeting?
Well, because you already suspended your other meeting and it looks like he only has one issue on his executive session, I would recommend you just go into executive session on this and then you can resume and go into executive on your other session and not have to worry about going back onto Zoom.
Very well. This board will meet in executive session under CRS 24-64024B, conferring with the county attorney for the purpose of receiving legal advice on specific legal questions, and item A, facility update. I hear motion, please.
I make a motion to go into executive session with DHS.
Second.
Commissioner Hess?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez.
Yes, so we'll resume here in the next 10 minutes or so, 5 to 10 minutes. And I believe everybody has the phone number, right?